It's to the best of our knowledge from PRX. I'm Anne Strangechamps, and I'm looking for wolves.
So this is the signal from Alpha Female 926. She's the daughter of the 06 female. I got to see her chase a mountain lion up a tree this winter. Have you ever done that?
No, I guess I have.
The best place in the world to see wolves is Yellowstone National Park. And the best person to see them with is Rick McIntyre. He's a wolf biologist, and he knows the park's wolves like no one else.
I'm like a parent that would die if they missed any of their kids' recitals or baseball games or whatever. I mean, they have to be there to see everything. I did have one stretch where I was out every single day for over 15 years. The reason why I didn't go beyond 15 is I had to have a heart bypass operation. But I was back in the field on the eighth day after the operation, and I've been out every day since.
It never gets tiring? It never gets boring?
No. It would kill me to miss a day.
The reintroduction of wolves to Yellowstone is one of the greatest conservation success stories in history. And Steve and I are here with Rick to see what he sees, looking through his scopes and following in his footsteps.
Look as quick as you can, it's howling.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Are these the first wild wolves you two have seen?
Yes.
Okay, congratulations. How do you feel about that?
Amazing.
Okay. You're smiling.
They're gorgeous.
Here, you could see the same wolves day after day. You could see them raise pups. You could see the pups grow up. In some cases, they would take over as the next generation. Some would fail, some would succeed.
You must know these wolves better than you know most people who you come in contact with.
Yes, in a way, I think that's true. You learn their strengths, their weaknesses. For the most part, they have very admirable personalities. And then once in a while, you kind of find a big loser.
Give me an example of a big loser.
One of our most famous wolves was number 302. He was totally unreliable and totally undependable. He was, as far as the female wolves were concerned, very good looking, and so they flocked to him. And since there happens to be a woman reporter here, I don't know if you've ever in your life met a guy that you discovered you couldn't rely on him, you couldn't trust him. For the audience, she's nodding her head, and the male reporter is trying to act inconspicuous here. Why don't you come back and take a look? This is really a good moment. She's actually in the water now.
Wait, where?
She's wading in that pool.
Oh, yeah, there she is. Huh? How old is she?
So probably about 15 months old. So she herself was a pup a year ago.
She looks a little playful.
Yes.
Oh, now she's kind of... Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, Steve, you have to see this. Right on the water's edge.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Rick, when she's doing this, is she having fun?
You know, it'd be like a kid trying to catch a bird or a snake or a turtle. That's fun. So, to me, she's taking a lot of initiative, and that's a good sign for her future.
So, I'm curious about how it seems like for you, some wolves kind of emerge as stronger characters, personalities.
And she could be one.
Tell me the story of Wolf 21. What made him an extraordinary wolf?
Well, there's so much to his life story we could go on for hours. To start with, he happened to be born with genetics that you could argue made him the most physically superior wolf of modern times, perhaps, whoever lived. He had this athletic coordination and agility that would put him on the level of a Muhammad Ali, a Michael Jordan, Usain Bolt, whatever you want to say. He was the epitome of masculine dependability. I mean, you could put him on a poster. this is what you're supposed to be like, guys. Be like Wolf 21.
How does that play out for a wolf to be so physically gifted? What can they do that other wolves can't do?
As far as we know, in his long life of 9 years, he never lost a fight. And in two occasions, I witnessed by himself to protect his family, he had to fight 6 opponents, and even then he won. As a young male, 21 was on the scene and witnessed his adopted father, who was undersized, who was the runt, who was bullied and picked on when he was young, to protect his family, 8 had to fight a much, much larger, much more aggressive, much more experienced alpha male. And somehow 8 won the fight, and he beat up the big guy and had him in his mercy. And the way that one wolf kills another wolf is they just tear the throat out. It's an instant death. And so he had the other guy at his mercy. The other guy was on his back. His throat was exposed, and all he had to do was reach down and kill this guy. And he let him go. 21 witnessed that, and you can understand that he would never forget that. And so, as far as I know, in his long career, 21 never killed a defeated opponent. He always let him go.
You loved him, didn't you? Is that a fair word to say?
Yes, and you could also say respect and admired. Yeah, all those words, sure, yeah. Hi, have you been seeing anything?
So who are all these people? I mean, is there a whole kind of culture of wolf watchers?
There is. There is kind of definitely a culture of wolf watchers here.
And okay. I should get your name.
Yes.
So you're...
Leanna Ferguson. I'm with Yellowstone Wolf Tracker, or Wildside.
I hadn't realized it's such a drama. I mean, it's almost like coming out to... every day for the next installment of the soap
opera.
It
is. It's kind of, you want to keep up with it because things change so fast in a wolf world. I mean, overnight you can lose the alpha female of the pack, and the next morning the pack is dismantled and things are changing. So it kind of goes fast. And so being out here, it's taught me just to kind of live in the moment more.
And what makes Rick remarkable? Because I know who he is.
I could talk on and on about Rick. I think he kind of makes this community, and he's just a special guy. I think there's no one that'll ever really replace Rick out here. Anyone could talk on and on about the importance of wolves with elk and wolves with disease ecology and all of that stuff, but like at the end of the day, that doesn't really matter. Like, it's about stories about connecting with humans, because if we don't connect with them, we're not gonna care about them. So.
He seems to really, when he talks about the wolves, he talks about them like people.
They're his family.
What eventually happened to 21?
Well, when you do this work and you know individual animals very well and you do admire them, you have to be prepared for the likelihood that many of them die deaths that may not be pleasant to either witness or learn about. The average lifespan of wolves in Yellowstone is only 5 years. He lived to be 9 years. However, 42, who he was very devoted to, very attached to, she died in February of his final year. And I think it's fair and accurate to say that he was never the same at that point. So about 4 months after she died, it was a normal day. He was out with his family. They were resting. An elk ran by. All the wolves jumped up, including him. They chased the elk. That's what wolves do. All of them chased the elk, except for 21. And he just stood there. And then he laid down like he just didn't have the energy anymore. And I knew at that moment that we were approaching the end. That was the last time I saw him alive. So a month went by, and then some people came up, and they had been riding horses up in the mountains, and they wanted to tell me something. So they tracked me down. They said, we were up here, they had a very good description location, and here's what we saw there. We knew the area. It was the place in late summer where for many, many years, 21 and 42 would bring their family when it was hot in the valley. The hunting was better up there. There were fewer bugs. They just rested side by side, took naps together. They could lift their heads and in the meadow see their new crop of pups playing. So it'd almost be like grandparents at the summer vacation, you know, just on the porch watching, you know, all the different generations and, you know, just relaxing and, you know, the times would have been good. So we rode up there, and that's where he was. And he was on this little hill. He was under a shade tree, and he was curled up from a distance. He certainly appeared to be sleeping. And it was very poignant to think through about the situation that he used the last bit of his great strength and endurance to climb that mountain. We're pausing for a second here. We're gathering our emotions here. Yeah, and certain people are trying to control themselves here.
Even after all these years.
Yeah, it was very emotional, yeah. And, you know, all of us wolf biologists, we all kind of walked off a little bit to have, you know, some moments to ourselves. But it was the perfect end of 21's story, and that's where he wanted to be.
One final question. I don't know if you have any other questions. I've talked with some wildlife biologists who, like you, live and breathe. I mean, their lives are devoted to the animals they study. And they talk about dreaming about those animals and how the animals have sort of occupied their psychic space, their unconscious. Do you dream about wolves?
Well, there was a time that I dreamed of wolves. Would you like to hear about that? So when I had to have that operation, it just happened they gave me a room where the window faced to the north. Yellowstone was to the south. What began to happen is every time I went to sleep, whether it was a nap during the day or at night, every time I had the same dream. And in the dream, I was in the hospital room. And in the dream, I would get up and I would go to the window and I would look out to the north and the wolves were there. It was the wolf pack in Lamar Valley, the Lamar Canyon wolf. And the alpha female in that group is the great-granddaughter of 21 and 42, and I knew them very well. But every time I went to sleep, I dreamed of those wolves. And then I got back here on the eighth day after the operation. We saw those exact wolves, those Lamar wolves that I had dreamed about, and I never had the dream again.
What do you make of that dream?
What do I make of that dream? You know, I haven't figured it out. I don't know. It certainly was an incentive to get back as quick as I can. So, yeah, I don't know. It's beyond me what was going on there. Yeah, I guess you could say the wolves were calling me back and they were waiting for me when I came back.
Gray moving about.
She's looking in the water. So if she sees something moving that looks edible, she'll try to catch it. Oh, folks, she got something. Yeah, she has something in her mouth. She might give it to a pup.
Rather than eat it herself?
Yeah. Watch for the pups to run to her. The pups are running after. I'm gonna as quick as you can, really, really fast, real fast.
Yes. Okay. Oh, Steve, look.
Oh yeah! Wow.
Okay. Oh my God.
We saw the pups. Oh, they're so cute.
Is that fun?
Yes, they're so cute. That was a good day. Rick McIntyre is a wolf biologist. He works for the National Park Service. And if you want to read more about him, there's a book coming out this fall that tells more of his story. It's called American Wolf by Nate Blakeslee. In the meantime, we put a little photo album of our day at Yellowstone up on our website at ttbook.org.